Hi there, I'm Emily Jacks, founder and director of Generation Us, where we believe in millennials. You are listening to the Purposely podcast, where we will be sharing some of the most amazing, inspirational stories of entrepreneurs, thought leaders, and educators, all geared towards you powering up in every aspect of your life. So my next guest is Stephen Ferrugia, and Stephen has established an amazing business, which is a social enterprise called ShareTree. We met a couple of months ago, pre-COVID-19, when the world was semi-normal, and I loved hearing his story. So we're going to hear from him today in terms of how he started off, because he hasn't had the usual route to success like a lot of entrepreneurs. So is it true, Stephen, that you actually started off your career as a tradesperson?
Absolutely, I did. So I had an interesting start. I'm gifted with the mild ability of dyslexia, and I do call it an ability because it's about working to our strengths. And, you know, the story of my start really plays into how I, over time, discovered the strengths of my character, and I worked towards the strengths of my character in order to get to where I am today. So dyslexia, for those that don't know about it, there's different forms of dyslexia. I have what's called a visual dyslexia. So it allows me to see patterns. But if I pick up a book and I look at the book, you would probably see the words as you read them. I see all the words on the page at once. So in high school, that left sort of my teachers in quite a dilemma, because the English teachers were like, what the hell is wrong with this kid? He can't read, or he reads really slowly. And then in the maths class, I was getting, you know, the highest marks in the whole school. So they keep sending me to English for a second language, and those teachers in there would say, no, this kid is really bright, he's genius, he just reads slow. They send me back to English, and English teachers would say, this guy doesn't know what he's doing, he can't read. And I was just bouncing around. So I ended up leaving school, long story short, because I didn't feel well. So, and that put me on the trade route, yeah, where I was using my hands. And I had an amazing mentor at Bosch who picked up on my visual reasoning ability. I did an aptitude test, and they picked up that I had 100% visual reasoning ability. And then he started coaching me and guiding me on how do I cultivate those character strengths so that I can have an impact based on my own unique abilities.
Wow, that's a really interesting point about the school system. We've had a conversation about this before, because my son also struggles, and what schools fail to do is play to kids' strengths. And I'm really excited about what you're doing in your organisation, ShareTree. But before we go down that path, can you tell us about how you got into business and got interested in personal development and evolution? Because you're an engineer as well as a tradesperson, and you know, those types of people aren't typically into the fluffy personal development stuff and spirituality. So can you just talk us through that?
Yeah, well, you know, in my career at Bosch, I give a lot of credit to my mentor. His name's Eberhard Weiss. So he picked up on this ability. He saw one day when I was working on a night shift that I was creating a structure, and I could see it in a deeper way. I could see it, you know, 3D. I could understand what it was doing, looking forward into the object. So he started guiding me and coaching me about cultivating that. And he put me on a pathway of engineering, heading towards higher education, and really encouraging me to go out there and do education and get back, even though I had a bit of start. So I've had a curiosity for business all along. I really like exploring things. I think curiosity is the doorway to actually building wisdom. Even though we need courage to drive ourselves to get a result, we do need that curiosity to first open the door to empower our courage to walk through it. So that curiosity led me down the pathway of entrepreneurship really early on. Had a friend that was studying marketing, and we went in and started dance parties at an early age, really just to bring together the community and have a lot of fun. But we were walking out of those dance parties with buckets of cash. My parents actually questioned me on stage. I said, "Are you selling drugs?" I was like, "Oh, not selling drugs at all." They're like, "Where are you getting all this money from?" It's like, "Well, we're running dance parties and everyone's having a good time, so they just keep coming and we're doing well out of it." So I invested money back in earlier on, and that was our very first business venture at age 18. But I had a passion for that, and I was doing the trade, studying engineering at the same time, and just had a thirst for personal growth and development. So,
Wow. And I saw in your bio that those dance parties were drug and alcohol free. How did you manage that? Because that would have been interesting.
Yeah, so we were really had a mixed community. I used to do security work as well. There's a little bit of extra fun. So I had a community of people within my kickboxing club that I knew that could run all the security. I had a passion for music. I had a passion for bringing people together. So we put on these dance party events, and we were fortunate enough, because we had a lot of enthusiasm, we attracted Hits FM at the time to sponsor us as well. We set up a profit sharing agreement where we gave money back to them. So they were promoting us online, and we were attracting, over 1,100 people to each event, and not just people pre-18. We were actually getting people that were, in their mid-20s as well, because we were attracting really great artists like Willie Tell and other techno and dance artists. So it was really a good opening. People were all coming together because they wanted to contribute and be part of the community, and we were generous with what we were making by giving it back to everyone that was contributing. So it was really a good learning place and a stomping ground to understand the fundamentals of entrepreneurial business.
Yeah, interesting. And so how did you move from that to where you are now? Because that was obviously a long time ago. You were 18 at that time. It's pretty interesting. I probably went to one of your raves because I used to go and watch Willie Tell. I'm showing my age now. I think we've had a laugh about this already. But my experiences at dance parties were definitely not drug and alcohol free. So I don't know, maybe I didn't go to yours. But anyway, I definitely spent a lot of time down at the sheds, down at the Docklands, listening to techno. I was definitely a part of that scene. But how you have told me about the moment you had a spiritual awakening. So I'd really love to delve into that, because that story fascinated me.
Yeah, I was in my early 20s, actually at a party, in fact, with my friends, and I was never big on drowning myself in alcohol or drugs. I mean, I've had my experiences, but it wasn't my weekend retreat, so to speak. I would probably do it once every couple of months. So I was at this party. I was sober. I drove most people, and I was sitting there. I was actually just observing, curiously again, trying to understand why were all of my friends drowning themselves in drugs and alcohol, trying to understand what was actually going on within themselves, within their heart, within their spirit, within their psyche. And what I was seeing was that they were actually trying to dissolve their own self-criticism and their own self-judgment and self-fear, just to be projectively their spirit, to connect in a way.
Yep.
And that left me a little disheartened and a little curious. So I left my car at that party that night, and I went for a walk home, which was about 25 Ks from where I was. And I
walked
the parklands, and I just love nature. That's one of my charging places. So I'm out in nature walking, and I decided I'm going to sleep out under the stars that night. And while I was sleeping out under the stars, drug and alcohol free, most people probably won't believe that, I had this really deep connection with the universe. I had a foresight that I would do well financially for business. And I made a promise with the universe for the first $1 million I made to give that back to charitable cause or community benefit. So some 10 to 15 years later, that moment came to fruition.
Wow.
And it's an interesting situation, because you have a contract with the universe, and I think there's probably no bigger contract that you could have set for yourself, but at the same time, it's not in this reality, if you understand what I mean.
Yeah.
So the ego starts a battle with itself, saying, "Look, there's no real contract there. Like, you've just worked hard to get to this first million, and then you've got these extra layers of, self-reflection about, well, I'm taking it out of the, the mouths of my own children and family to give it to some people or the community I don't know." And my father-in-law was sort of backing that up as well, saying, "Well, you've worked so hard for that money. Why would you take it out of your own bank accounts and give it to the community?" And then, the epiphany came again. It was like, well, what's the point of us having a world and all of this money for ourselves, but having a world where our kids don't flourish, they can't grow, they can't live their own purpose in life, they can't have the education they need? So, in fact, I am giving it to my family. I'm giving it to my family and every other family so that everybody in the world can have a better place. And I think the more people that do that, the faster we'll accelerate and improve the world. It's constantly improving, but there's some way to go, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree, but it's really interesting. A lot of the entrepreneurs and millennials I speak to, and I know that you're not a millennial, but you're like me, you're on the cusp, let's call you a zennial, have this real desire to want to make a difference, and social entrepreneurship is this kind of new norm where people are realizing that money does not make you happy, and they've done a lot of research into how much money you need to feel safe. Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and it's about in Australia $70,000, I believe. And post that, really, what more do we need? Like, material things don't make us happy. So it's really interesting to hear you speak like that. So where is ShareTree today? What is ShareTree? Can you explain that for our listeners?
So I'm probably a serial social entrepreneur. So I did 12 startups.
Wow.
I wasn't measuring at the time. So there were startups of businesses and startups of technologies and products within those businesses. We've had 68% success rate on bringing those organisations to profit. There was really a couple of key drivers behind that: leading with purpose and creating cultures around that purpose that were driven by the purpose, but authentically built connection between people. So the successes of those businesses got us to the point where it was like, well, you know, now it's time to give back, to keep that contract with the universe. So when we started looking out to the world, we evaluated what was really creating a scarcity of education, income equity, the fairness of distributing income across the planet, and building corporate structures that were contributing back to society. That were the three key things that were stopping the world that I think could be more balanced, equitable, and harmonious. So I was like, well, how do we create now a movement that creates that shift? And if you take the words from, you know, the famous man Gandhi, he says, be the change you want to see. So I had that sense of enough, you know, and you spoke about before, it's about $70,000 to, you know, has a radical impact from 70 to about 120, has minimal from 120 to 200 is very slight, from 200 to 400 is practically flat. And then post $400,000 is actually a decline in happiness. I've worked with a lot of high wealth individuals and they're not any happier for it unless they engage with their money to create purposeful impact. And that's what we did. So we decided to take all of our entities that we'd created and convert all of them into half charitable entities, 50% profit. So ShareTree, which is the company I work in predominantly most of the time, besides sitting on the board of these other entities, is a full charity entity, and it holds 50% share in all of those entities. It makes sure it stays true and integral to its purpose. And what we do with the 50% of profits, not revenue, but profits that come out of those organizations, is we invest in other social entrepreneur startups, and we build amazing technologies that help with well-being in workplaces and teams and performance. That's the things that we love. That's the things that we do.
Amazing. Such an amazing story from somebody who, is more of a tradesperson or a technical person to now be running an organization that is about building performance-based culture. But from what I've read about all of the stuff that you do, it's really about gratitude, which I'm really fascinated in. So can you tell us a little bit about how you embed gratitude into a workplace culture? Because I think a lot of people out there think that gratitude is a bit of a buzzword, but why is gratitude so important?
Yeah, it's a buzzword for good reason. It, character traits, there's a whole range of character traits. You know, we engage in our foundational character traits, which are around mindfulness and around self-discipline. Then we've got character traits around our connection aspect to our being, which are forgiveness and tolerance, and respect. And then you've got, you know, our willpower type of character traits, which are courage and determination and steadfastness. And you've got our center of being, which is our heart. And in those character traits is where gratitude resides. So I'll touch on the other layers shortly, but I want to go deep into gratitude if I can for a minute, because it's really a powerful thing. I had the privilege of watching both of my children come into existence. They're both IVF. And in that process, you see a group of cells. I've actually got it tattooed on my arm here now. In that process, you see the cells coming together. And
yeah, what happens, I love it.
They split, and they're just a group of cells. And at some stage, those cells, the very first thing that starts beating is right at the center of those cells. And it's not the brain. It's not any other organs. It's the heart. So yeah. I believe consciousness resides in our heart, and gratitude is in that group. Gratitude I find to be the most powerful character trait at transforming one's emotions. So it's the only character trait that releases four key chemicals in the body: dopamine, adrenaline, oxytocin, and serotonin.
Wow. And they make you
driven, rewarded, harmonious, and in a state of love and flow. So purpose is the only one that comes close to it.
So yeah.
Why, when we run culture programs at workplaces, it's actually really simple. We help people, particularly leaders, get into the space of gratitude and to express it in everyone around them just once a day. It takes as little as 5 minutes a day, and we see cultures transform. Well-being and mental health goes up by 3% every 3 months, so roughly 1% every month. And it plateaus at about 4 out of 5. So people get to this state of feeling more in happiness than before. The average person is about 2 out of 5 happiness when we start these programs. So it's a really powerful way to get transformation within team cultures.
It's amazing. So, yeah, I know from the work that I've done around NLP and some of the self-development stuff I have worked on with myself, one of the things that I was lacking in was gratitude and being grateful for what I had. And I was very much stuck in thinking about all of the things that I didn't have. And it's so toxic to be in that state of mind. And I see so many businesses that are stuck in that state, with leaders that are stuck in that state. And just, you've nailed it, you know, hit the nail on the head, that gratitude is the one thing that can transform not just a person, but a culture. It's, you're talking my language. I love it. And leaders these days, I feel, need a whole new set of skills and a whole new set of, like a whole new toolkit that they're not being provided by the traditional leadership programs. So how do you work with leaders to get them to have those transformations? And, you know, for me, I'm really passionate about helping people find their purpose and purpose-led leadership, because once people tap into that, everything else comes. But the gratitude piece is also really important.
So we work a lot in the space of mindset. There's three parts. I call it the Trinity of Being, led by spirit, but founded by emotions and physical. So be, do, have, or mind, body, spirit, whichever one model you want to use. So we work on the leadership mindset, the emotional aspect, so that they can cultivate aspects of gratitude. And it's about spotting in a day and building new routines to express gratitude by naming the character strengths and describing how you've seen it in action. And a simple explanation is, you know, Emily, I really appreciate you having the ability to empower others. Yeah, I can see your quality of generosity. And you look out for opportunities where you see good things happening in the world in order to give other people the opportunity to spread their story and the message, like what we're doing right now. So we teach leaders how to have that simple conversation and that simple dialogue. And it is that simple. People think it's really complicated to create team culture. It's not complicated. It's about holding and harnessing within yourself a mindset of gratitude and expressing it outward based on the character traits we see. Now, we back that up with technology to form a new habit. The myth is it's 20 days, but we can tell you the science behind it. It's 90 days plus.
Okay. And
for 3 months, you need to practice this routine. But at the end of 3 months, we've got people reporting that the world actually looks different. Yeah, the brain neurologically rewires, and you get all of these new pathways in the brain that allow you to perceive the world in a different way. Yeah, and there's different, you know, chemicals and treatments that can help you stimulate that as well. But gratitude does it, and it's within each of us. So by forming that, this helps leaders then get better connections with their teams, and it touches on every layer, helps people feel more secure, more connected, more achieved, more valued, helps them create a sense of freedom, truth, and autonomy, helps people evolve their characters, and lastly, helps them feel more meaningful. And they're the seven layers of culture.
Amazing. It sounds so simple, and everybody, it's like culture is the utopia that is unattainable. I think that that's what a lot of organizations think. How do you deal with resistance? Because I would imagine there would be certain types of leaders, you know, the old autocrat, like I'm thinking, Donald Trump style leaders, who would really struggle with this fluffy stuff because they're not good at saying thank you or well done. In fact, they're only good at giving people negative feedback. And that's one of the challenges that I deal with in my HR consulting business, is that most cultures are really centered around negative feedback and being told when they've done something wrong. So how do you get those leaders to make that shift? Because I could imagine that would not be easy.
Yeah, well, we don't hold the expectation for perfection. So if you've heard of the principle of Kaizen, a Japanese principle,
yep. It's
the art of change and continuous improvement. So mm-hmm. What we do is we try to get every leader to embrace an opportunity of openness so that they can try something new. And if they can experience the benefits themselves and cultivate it, then we see transformation. Now, not all of them want to come along for the ride. That's all right. Each person, Emily's on their own journey. But what we want to do is help those that want to empower others. We're passionate about empowering people, the people that care about people and understand that the best results come at converting revenues into profit by having good cultures, and good cultures are nothing but the collective character of people. So what we do with leaders is we let them build experiences to see that and feel that firsthand. When they see it, feel it, then they can think about how they can repeat that and build a routine. We don't get 100%, but we get a vast majority of people that come along, and the transformation's slow in the world. What employees will do is gravitate towards leaders that operate that way. So naturally, those leaders get higher results. And if those leaders get higher results, then boards and executives recruit more of those people. And people that look for employers look more for those employers. So we're out to create more transparency about the cultures that cultivate, you know, gratitude at the center of their being. And by default, they get higher performance anyway. So the transformation is slow, but it's consistently growing.
Amazing. How have you seen COVID-19 impact on company cultures and business? I'm sure you've got some clients that are thriving and others that are dying. So what's your take on that?
Yeah, we've seen a mix of results. So Gallup and ResearchGate, they talk about engagement as the key measure for team culture. And I agree, it is the key measure. But there's more to the equation than just being engaged or disengaged. You know, there are four actual types of engagement. There's disengagement, then there's directive engagement. So there are people that are feeling secure, supported, accomplished, and somewhat valued, but they don't have a sense of autonomy, freedom, and meaning and purpose. And then you've got people that are disheartened. So they do have a sense of meaning, autonomy, and evolution, but they don't feel supported, secure, valued, and accomplished. And then you've got self-actualized engagement, where people have all those aspects. So what we've seen amidst COVID-19, and we have the privilege of having the data of team culture engagement surveys that we run for the teams that we support, we can see what types of engagement teams had pre-COVID-19 and what types of engagements they had post-COVID-19. Now, we've seen that the cultures that operate out of gratitude and purpose, specifically those two, gratitude and purpose, have moved into self-actualized engagement. They've actually, the strain has clustered them together into a better quadrant. And then we've seen the cultures that don't practice gratitude as a routine and don't lead with purpose. I mean, they might have fancy lip service up on the wall, but there's a difference between writing a purpose and saying that you're a culture of gratitude and living it. And when you're living it and you're acting it and you're sacrificing yourself as a leader before your team, then you get those higher self-actualized teams. Now, the teams that haven't been practicing gratitude and purpose have actually clustered together as well, but they've moved down into the disengagement piece. And we're seeing them polarize one way or the other, and it's only purpose and gratitude that's making all that difference.
Yeah, I would agree. It's really interesting. I think that people will remember how their organizations treated them during this time, and we've seen the broad spectrum of that, organizations that have panicked and started getting rid of people and have not communicated with people about what's going on. They're the ones that are really suffering right now because the employees have no safety, they've got no certainty, and their culture is imploding and everybody's feeling anxious, to other organizations that have, you know, been really transparent, upfront, communicated with their employees, engaged with them, which has been quite difficult given that we're all working remotely. But it's amazing the contrast that it's had, an impact that it's had on their culture. So I couldn't agree more with you around that gratitude and saying thank you, and you know, just the constant message that we're all in this together and that we're, you know, we're a community.
Yeah, there's something about being in someone's presence as well. I was just talking to this with one of my colleagues the other day, and, you know, working through this, it's amazing. I'm completely grateful for the technology. And at the same time, there's no substitute for real connections and being energetically in the presence of another person. Like we were talking about the value of actually just walking to go and buy a coffee in the morning together.
Yes.
And that walk, where most times you don't even say anything, it's just being in the presence and you're harmonizing your energies. And then you have a rich conversation after you buy the coffee and you sit down for 5 minutes. Now, with the technology, we're still there. We're still in some ways having the conversations, but all the little nuances that go around it are missing. So some of our leaders in some of our companies have suggested, we can optimize costs, right? We can cut out having an office altogether and continue this mode because it seems to be working. And I agree, it is working, but it's not a sustainable approach. We are biologically wired to be communal as people.
Exactly. Right?
We're a tribal species, so we need to congregate back together, but hold on to a lot of the things we've learned through this beautiful learning experience of going into isolation and distance.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I'm an extrovert and I get my energy from people, so I've found this quite difficult at times because I need human interaction. Like, that's what drives me. And it's so funny, like, even going for a walk in the morning, which I do nearly every morning, just how excited people are to see another person, and they make eye contact and they're like, hi. Whereas before, these people wouldn't even look at you. They'd just be looking at the ground. So I think that people have really understood the value of human connection once it's been taken away. I know I have. I think it's brought a lot of people together, and I'm really excited for what happens next. I mean, there's lots of people out there, spiritual people, talking about this event is part of a cycle. I don't know if you've read some of the literature about this, and at this time, I don't even know how to explain it because I'm not an expert, but, you know, the Mayan culture or civilization died at this cycle the same time, I don't know how many years ago, and that it's all part of this cycle. You being a spiritual person, Stephen, what do you think about all of that?
From the spiritual side of things, I like balancing things with logic, engineering and spirit. So even where we've purchased my house, my family and I, it's right on the border. Behind us is 3,000 acres of forest, and in front of us, all the suburbs and a view out to the city. So we're sitting on these two worlds. We are moving into the age of Aquarius, which brings about this new age, higher frequency, higher wisdom, higher connection. Those that meditate a lot and have a spiritual practice are collectively seeing it. So we run Meditation Circles Melbourne on Facebook, and there's a lot of conversations going on about the things that people are experiencing. We also have the Growing Gratitude community on Facebook, which you should come and join us there. A lot of people there talking about how scarcity has created a greater appreciation for the things that are purposeful and meaningful to them in their life, and expressing gratitude every day. So there is a transcendence going on. I think the human species is constantly evolving. All you need to do is look back in time. You know, our parents went through the age of the Industrial Revolution. Again, scarcity brought about an awakening there, a scarcity of money in that case, which helped them drive their willpower to achieve and create. That was a beautiful thing. Our generation went through the technology and information revolution. So we got to see information, and we're one of the rare few, what do you call us, Xennials? The quality of reading a book and having a conversation, and where we used to, you know, load up games using a cassette tape on your computer and not just plug in a disc. So, but we understand the technology as well. We can still use it. And then the new generation is the social revolution. You know, these are the people that now have enough. They have a sense of enough. They know what it's like to achieve. So there's abundance in the mindset, and the heart is filled with joy. Now it's about creating equality and harmony and empowering everyone around us so that we all can live our purpose and we can all give our gifts to the world. So I think it's one of the most exciting times to ever be alive.
I would agree. Look, I've loved talking to you. This is amazing. So for everyone out there who's looking to try and get a bit more gratitude into their lives or build that practice into their lives, what would be the one thing that they could do every single day that isn't too fluffy, but just something simple that they could perhaps start today or tomorrow?
Yeah, there's different levels of gratitude maturity that we talk about. So the most basic thing you can do is to have a practice of gratitude that's internal. So whether it be a journal that you write that down, whether it be someone that you're close to that you express it to every day, but you just reflect on something that you're grateful for. It can be as simple as your breath. If you contract COVID-19, I can't tell you how grateful you will be for your breath once you recover. If you take something away, then you realize what it's worth to you. One basic one that I often do is when I open my eyes in the morning, I'm grateful for all of the amazing colors that I can see out the window and around me, because my mind could never create such an abundance of color and creativity. Yeah, it's a gift that's there. And they're around us all the time. Yeah, the blades of grass moving in the wind, the breeze on your arms, understanding that there's people around you and that there's a sense of love. Like, there's so many things to be grateful for, that there's so many that we sometimes become complacent and we forget. So the first thing to do is to express it. The next level of gratitude maturity is about, you know, propagating it in others around us. So join a group. That's why we created the Growing Gratitude Community. So you can practice expressing it outwards. It's a little uncomfortable initially, but what it does, if I express gratitude to you, not only do I get a dose of those chemicals we spoke about earlier, and you get them, but the onlooker gets them as well. And the last one is to create the movement, to build a culture in your workplace, in your family, in your school. Doesn't really matter, but if you build and lead a community of gratitude, you're actually creating waves of change for the world.
I love it. I love it. It's so important. I mean, I'm not doing it at the moment. You've just reminded me, but in the car every morning when I drive my son to school, we do our gratitude, and I get him to talk about what he's grateful for, who he's grateful for, and, you know, what was the best thing that happened to him yesterday and what he's looking forward to most about today. And I'm programming him to use the language of gratitude and saying he's grateful. And now he says it all the time, "Mummy, I'm so grateful that you bought me this," or "I'm so grateful for this ice cream." And like, little kids are just the sponges. And if we can start the revolution with the younger ones, imagine what the world is going to look like in 10, 20 years. Like, we're building that momentum. So I think we'll leave it there. I mean, I could talk to you about this stuff forever. We might finish off with, if for all those budding entrepreneurs out there who've got an idea, what would be the one piece of advice that you would give to them?
For successful entrepreneurs and products, it's about cultivating the mindset of service. So if you're going into a business with the objective of making money, there is a high chance that you won't succeed. But if you go in with the mindset of creating something of service that does not yet exist, that makes other people's life more meaningful, fulfilling, and easier, then you increase your chances of success. And the reason behind that is because people buy people. People don't buy things, people buy people. And if you're a person that's doing something that's meaningful and it adds value into my life, and it creates value for the people around me, now that's something I want to invest my time, money, and effort in. So make sure you're operating at a service.
I love it. It's about having a purpose and it's about your why, and it needs to be bigger than making money. Great advice. Thank you so much, Stephen. I've loved speaking to you, and I'm going to share with the listeners where they can find you. And I'm definitely going to be joining your gratitude group on Facebook. So watch this space.
Love to see you there. I'm looking forward to seeing, Emily, your expressions of gratitude. So thanks for making the time for us today. Thanks for all your amazing work.
I'm Emily Jax. Thanks for listening to the Purposely podcast. If you liked what you heard, don't forget to leave us a review, and see you all next time.